I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this last day of March. How to manage media in families was the March 20th chapter in This Life, appearing in the New York Times, written by our guest this hour, Bruce Feiler. Few firsts generate more ambivalence than the first cell phone, he writes. Many parents welcome this milestone. You can keep track of children when they're out and notify the children if they're running late. Parents can gain leverage, but children, and we'll probably add adults, tend to disappear through the looking glass when they get their first phone. They become vulnerable to the dark side of the internet, and once comfortable routines get upended. Bruce is with us this hour. He writes, as we said, This Life column for the Sunday New York Times. He's written a number of New York Times bestsellers. He is the writer-presenter of the PBS series Walking the Bible and is one of America's most popular voices on contemporary life. He writes and speaks regularly about the role of religion in contemporary life, and his most recent book is The Secrets of Happy Families. It's what he calls a bold playbook for families today. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I would think that you all have experience with cell phones and you have rules and the rules get broken and you can't reach your children and they don't answer your phone or they only answer texts, and how do you keep that from happening? And what about adults? We sit at the dinner table sometimes and people are on their electronic devices and on the internet all the time. It's there. It's addictive. You're getting a lot of information. But what's happening to families as a result of all of that? That's what we're talking about this hour, and we're welcoming phone calls for Bruce. Here's how you reach our conversation, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. And I guess most important for this conversation, we should tell you that Bruce is the father of tweens. Right at the age it all starts, right, Bruce?
Twin tweens, I should say.
Are you serious? Oh my gosh!
Maybe we should coin a term right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Yes, my daughters will be 10 in exactly 2 weeks, and so now is when the parents are huddling in the corner. What are your rules? How are you handling it? You already have a phone? Ma'am, you kidding?
Oh, and the years have only just begun. Are you in for a ride? So they don't have phones yet, or do they?
They don't. And we have promised them that they will be the last in their class to get phones. And really what has motivated me through now 5 years of writing this column in the New York Times and through The Secrets of Happy Families has been the rules today are just different, and in effect we're making them up in real time. I mean, I think that kind of the way I look at families is there have been a number of changes in families in the last generation. One, sort of a change in the definition of the family, right, so that we've got gay families, adoptive families, we've got unified families who live in separate homes, we've got divorced families who live in the same house, so sort of the definition of the family has changed. Mm-hmm. We've got moms working in much greater numbers, right? 3/4 of moms are working in some capacity outside of the home. That's our record high. But the flip side of that is you now have dads much more involved in everyday parenting than we've ever seen before. I just looked at a study this week that said the amount of time dads spend with their kids, 3 times what it was in 1975. Hmm. Still less than moms, but rising and rising rapidly. And then, of course, the other thing is we have technology. And so when we, you know, like a lot of parents, my wife and I, when we would get in trouble, we would ask our parents what they did, but their experience is so outdated, it's almost quaint at this point.
Yeah.
Or we would Facebook our friends, but they're just as clueless as we are. And so sort of my work has been around, okay, we're in this challenge. We're all in it together. Can we put together some rules? And that's what motivated me and what motivated this particular column.
Yeah, it's so omnipresent. My husband came home from, he's a writer, he was on the road for a while, and so one of the sons was over, we have adult children, and we were having dinner last night, and somebody asked what I was doing on the show today, and I talked about the first hour, and then I talked about you and the use of cell phones, etc. And the adult son looked up at me and said, what are you talking about? Because, of course, I didn't notice.
Yeah.
His head was down looking at the cell phone. I said, case in point, this is what we're talking about. What's happening around this table at this very moment? But I must say, adults are guilty of it, too. There is something about we're all kind of watching the phones all the time now, or on our iPads or on the computers. It's just omnipresent, not only for children.
Well, I think that there's no doubt that the adults are problematic. And, you know, when I speak a lot about families around the country, and inevitably this is the first question that comes up when we get to the Q&A. And you know, my way of looking at this and what I usually say to parents is, you got an issue with technology in your home? Let's begin by looking in the mirror, not looking at the children.
Yes.
So I think that there's no doubt that, and in my piece, one of the things that I wrote down here is, you know, do unto yourself first before you do unto the children. And I was at a dinner recently. We've all been at these dinners where I was at dinner with a bunch of people on their phones, and basically somebody would speak, and when they spoke at this dinner full of adults, they did not look at their phones. But the minute that they stopped speaking, they went back to the phone. So everyone was literally talking to nobody.
Oh, no.
Making a pronouncement to the table and then going back to the phone. So, yes, we have this thing, and my wife is a sort of big device emailer, and my kids have a song, Mommy, 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 and her emails. And so we've instituted this rule. My kids instituted this rule around the table, which is that when somebody goes to the bathroom, they have to leave the phone behind, because we were finding that people were going to the bathroom and disappearing for like 10 minutes away.
Oh,
it
didn't
take them long to use the bathroom. It's because they were using that as a legitimate technology break.
Mm. Well, some of the things that, I mean, it's a wonderful thing in some ways. There's all this information and you're connecting with people, sometimes in a significant way, you know, finding out about their lives and connecting with people from your past who you've wondered what has happened to them. But there also, as you remind us, there is this whole dark side of the internet. There's a dark side to Facebook and bullying that goes on and pornography that's there. I mean, it's a good thing, but it simultaneously can be a very dark thing. So how does that make you think about when you give this device that opens the world? At what age can you handle that? What rules? Because you can't stop somebody from going to those sites or from being on Facebook. Once they have the phone, there they are, right?
Well, let me unpack that a bit. So let me just first of all agree with you that there's a lot of great things about technology and families. You mentioned your husband was traveling. If you had children, your husband could communicate with your children. I mean, your children are older, so that's less of an issue. My parents live in Georgia. I live in Brooklyn. My dad is quite sick and can't travel, and so we're constantly, whether it's Facebooking or FaceTiming or going back and forth, a child is working on a project about London. Didn't you go to London many years ago? Would you scan a picture and send it to them and we can have a conversation? So there are a lot of ways that technology can bring us closer together. So before we now get into the dark side, we should acknowledge that there are a lot of upsides. And
right.
So I think that what I'm always motivated by is, can we come up with some general rules here? Because every family is different. Every circumstance is different. And I think that, but I do want to say that there is a dumb phone as well as a smartphone. So one of the things that parents of adolescents of sort of, you know, 10 to 12 to 13 year olds do is give their child a dumb phone, which is to say a phone that has dialing capacity but not unfettered access to the internet. So you can have, in effect, training wheels for a period of time before you make it all the way to there are no rules whatsoever. And I, because as you mentioned at the outset, Kathleen, it's important to say parents welcome this in a lot of cases, because what this moment tends to be accompanied by is walking to school by yourself, maybe going out with friends, maybe a parent is on the way to pick up a child from a soccer practice and the parent is running 10 minutes late. A phone is good for the parent to say, I'm going to be a little bit late, or a child is going from, you know, Susie's house to the movies, and you can communicate. So the parents welcome this, but you do need some sort of regulations, and that's why I think that the first regulation that all the people that I spoke to is just to say, we're going to give you this phone, but here's rule number one. I'm still your parent, okay? And in the event that I'm still paying for it, I can take it away. I'm going to get all the passwords to all the anything that you are a member of. It comes with the promise that you have some independence, so I'm not necessarily going to read every one of your texts, but you should know at any moment that I can go and read your texts. So rule number one, just because you have a phone doesn't mean you're not living under my roof and we don't have some rules. Because if you try to do it retroactively, which is to say the other way parents do it is give the kid the phone, wait for the mistakes, and then work backwards, it's always harder as a parent. Any teacher will tell you this. You got to be stricter in September or you're going to lose control of them in April. It's easier to upfront have the rules or to say we're going to have rules and we're going to evolve them as you get older rather than retroactively try to apply them.
Right. You begin the article talking about, which I, of course, think is a great idea, a mother in Massachusetts who wrote her 13-year-old son a letter about his first phone. And one of the things, of course, she said is, it's a phone saying, hello, use your manners, which you should do. And don't ever ignore a home call if the screen reads mom or dad. Not ever. And that happens. But people are coming up with all of these lists, these contracts. Here's how you will use it. Here's what you will do. Here's what you will not do. Are they ignored or are they adhered to?
I would have to say that, you know, I'm the type of parent that would probably lean toward the contract. But everything in the Secret Happy Family is one of the ideas in that book that sort of most has resonated with readers who contact me is the idea of creating a family mission statement, right? Sort of an overarching set of values. And I think that what you want, whether it's the family mission statement or a family meeting where you talk about how we're going to function for the week or a contract, what you want is an architecture of cooperation, of sort of, we live in an ecosystem where we're going to talk about this. We're going to set some rules. They're going to change. It's going to evolve. You may slip. I may slip. We're not going to be perfect, but we're doing it not so much so that you can follow the letter and spirit of every law, but just so you know that we're going to be constantly discussing this. Because if you sign a contract this year, almost guaranteed, especially with technology, there's going to be an app in 6 months or 12 months that you can't anticipate. I just learned myself, actually after I wrote this piece about this site called Ask FM, which has been out there for several years, I just learned about it because my kids have not been in the demographic, where you can go on this website and ask kids anonymous questions, okay? Like, and it was meant for what's your favorite song and what's your favorite sports team, but what children are doing it for, middle school kids are sort of going on saying, why are you so fat? Or, and what I just learned, because the headmaster of my children's school told me about this last week at a school gathering, is the children, you have to approve every posting. And the children are approving these things because they would rather have someone ask them an obnoxious and mean question than to ask them no question at all. Hmm. It's unimaginable to me, but in the you know universe that they live in, having someone ask them a question and to be popular is more valuable than to be criticized. As a parent, it's almost impossible. Did you see Snapchat coming? Did you see sexting coming?
No.
Did you see Ask FM coming? You're not going to see it. So
no. Right.
You want to have a world where you can know with your children, we're going to discuss this. We're going to have a check-in once a quarter. We're going to discuss this once a month. Twice a year, we're going to sit down and establish the rules for a family just to make sure you're reminding them we're still a family.
Right.
Still holding your hand.
And it may not be a bad idea to look at those pictures of when you were 10 or 11 or 12 or 13 and remember what you were thinking then, too, because it was not all that dissimilar. Being liked, having friends was very, very important.
And you're thinking about the friend, right? There's a story that this psychologist in Los Angeles told me about her daughter, her 13-year-old daughter, goes on to wish a friend happy birthday on Instagram. And her daughter, this woman studies this question, and her daughter writes, hey, remember that time when you shoplifted the other week? It was so
right.
fun, ha, ha, ha. And so the mother has to come and say, do you realize that this is public? You're thinking about your friend, but his parents are going to be seeing this.
Right.
His teachers are going to be seeing this. Maybe somebody offering him a summer job or, God forbid, later on letting him into college or not. They're so thinking about their friend, they're forgetting that it's public. You're doing it with a megaphone. It's permanent, and the whole world gets to see it. I think the larger point here is adolescents are pulling away. We want them to pull away. It's natural that they pull away. It's completely what is expected, but they still need our guidance. They want the independence, but they're not fully ready for it yet. And part of our job as a parent of adolescents is to help coach them on the transition as they move toward independence.
Absolutely. Grandma's looking at it. That seems to be effective, right?
Well, I love this rule. That's what we called it in my piece, is the grandmother rule. Before you post something, think of the most embarrassing person in your life. Your grandmother, the school principal, your pastor, whoever it might be, think of the most embarrassing person and assume they're going to read it. And if that gets you that extra second to pause before you press send or post or whatever it might be, that's a good habit to get into.
We're welcoming phone calls, and I would think that many of you are living with this or you have lived with it. You have a lot to add to the conversation. Bruce Feiler is our guest today. Bruce writes the This Life column for the New York Times. His most recent book is The Secrets of Happy Families, and he's a writer, presenter of the PBS series Walking the Bible, and has written 6 consecutive New York Times bestsellers. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. When do you think it's appropriate for your children or your grandchildren or for children to have cell phones? Should they be taking them to school, which now Mayor Bill de Blasio is allowing New York City school children to do that? The earlier mayor said you couldn't do that. I know that different districts have different rules in that regard. What rules do you have for your family? Do you think that adults are frequently hypocrites because they're on their phones just as much as their children are? What do you need to do to establish in your family proper use of these devices, and when do you turn them off? 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bruce Feiler is with us now. Here we go with our phone calls, starting with Donna in Minneapolis. Hi, Donna.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So my experience with adolescents and cell phones is that my daughter 10 years ago was 13 and got a cell phone before I did, because her father got her one. Like a lot of families, you know, who were divorced, and that can create a little more difficulty with this coherent message to the kid. Anyway, she had a dumb phone, I guess you would call it. And what happened, I found, was that it did not increase our ability to keep track of her, because I felt like the kids all were always a step ahead. They all connected to what I called the mothership, this flow of information that I didn't have any access to. And she just used the phone as a tool to stay one step ahead of me and just get into a lot of trouble. And I kind of feel like if you've got a kid who's going to do what you say and not go off the rails, the cell phone's great. But it doesn't protect a kid who's, for whatever reason, is heading into trouble from getting into trouble. And it doesn't help the parents keep track any better.
Can I ask you a question? Did you have what restrictions did you try, and did they fail, or did you try some that worked, or how did you handle when it went?
You know, that's a very long story. But yeah, I took away the phone, and when we first got the phone, of course, I didn't have a phone and had no experience with cell phones, and didn't understand why really anybody but doctors needed a cell phone. I mean, I was kind of, you know, a Luddite. And so then I got a phone because I thought, well, she has a phone and I'm supposed to be keeping track of her with the phone. I better get a phone. And, you know, it was set forth some conditions, but, you know, it's very, kids can be very tricky. And so I took the phone away many times. I never completely took the phone away for very long. I think like 3 months is the longest. But it didn't matter, you know. It didn't change the track that she was on. I mean, I don't think the cell phone is a device that enables you to better control your child. I think it's just, in fact, I think it works the opposite way. I mean, I think it just, it can, you know, it's like the perfect device for a kid who is impulsive and who is, you know, kind of trying to be sneaky and feels impervious to consequences. It's just, it's the perfect tool.
All right, Bruce.
So a couple things here. So first of all, let me just agree with you entirely that the cell phone is unlikely to dramatically change the larger dynamic of a family. So if you have a particular child that's difficulty, and we all struggle with our children in one way or the other, it's not likely to redirect that in a significant way, and it's not going to fix the problem if it's bad. It actually might make it worse if it's good. You hear a lot of parents say, well, we used to have togetherness time, and then the phones came and we didn't. So just, but a couple of rules that do seem to universally work, and let me throw in some research here that will get it out of the anecdotal to the research,
okay.
to a sort of a more you know, social science level. There is very significant research out of the University of Basel this actual year that said children who keep the smartphone in the bedroom with them overnight will spend an hour more a day on their phone than children who do not. They will watch more videos, they will send more texts, they will do more surfing of the Internet. So here, for anybody who's struggling with this now, here is a good, safe, relatively easy to do intro rule. You will not have the bedroom in. You will not have the phone in your bedroom during sleeping time. We will charge the phone in a public place, by the front door, in the bathroom, you know, in mom and dad's bedroom, wherever it is. You will not have the phone, and you can just make an. You can try an iron rule. You can try 9 o'clock. You're going to give it to me, or 8 o'clock, or 10:30, or whatever. But what I've heard is that the time rules become difficult. Maybe you're busy. Maybe you don't have time to follow it. So one way is to make a physical rule. Okay. You will put the phone, you need the phone when you're out because I need to get in touch with you. When you walk in the door, boom, it goes into a box. When we have a meal, it's going to go in the middle of the table, and that includes when we're out in a restaurant. When you're doing your homework at night, there will be no phone. So try to do the restrictions physically, not time-wise, because the time you're constantly, oh, I gotta call this person, or it's late, or I went to a movie, or I had sport practice that ran late. So try to get out of the situation where every single night you're having the same fight over and over again. And don't let them have the phone in their bedroom at night.
Mm-hmm. And that's true. I mean, even from an adult perspective, I'm thinking about, I'm kind of hooked on this this television series that actually I saw 15 years ago, and now I got an iPad. So I think, all right, I'll watch one more. And it gets to be really late at night. I should be sleeping, and instead there's something about it. It's right there. This last one was so good, you're gonna watch another one. Heck, if I brought that up to the bedroom, I'd be up all night.
Well, exactly. And then you have the issue of, you know, looking in the diode. Looking at it too long, too close to sleep can actually help set your sleep patterns. And then the thing that I have to say, I'm somewhat guilty of this. I was needling my wife earlier for saying that she checks her email during a meal. I'm guilty of rolling over the middle of the night and just, I'll just dash a glance at my phone.
Oh,
suddenly,
right.
There's the work email that I didn't want to think about, and suddenly there's my mind, you know, heading off to work at 4 in the morning. So keeping it away from your bedroom at night, and maybe your bedroom at all,
mm-hmm.
is a really good goal to think about.
All right, Bruce, do that tonight.
Okay.
Re-airing.
I saw you're re-airing it. This show re-airs at night, right?
Yes, so it does.
So anybody listening now, turn off your streaming device.
And it'll be an hour ahead where you are, so yours better
exactly.
be
if
off,
if I tune on the Internet, I'm dead for the
That's
night.
That's right.
I'll disagree with myself. I want to correct what I said.
Thank you, Donna, for the call. Let's go to Sarah in Cuba City. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Really enjoying the show. I'm the mother of five, and my two oldest are getting to the age where they have iPods, and so we're learning as we go. But I'm really looking for resources or some way to help me maybe even put together some kind of a workshop for other parents and kids. I think that the technology can be fun, it can be educational, but I really want my children to be safe, and I want them to be responsible with their friendships also. You know, how does a text sound when you send it to your friend? Or, you know, I don't want them to go out fishing for compliments on Instagram with, you know, a post like me, like it if you think I'm pretty, things
right.
like that. But
yeah.
right.
how can I get some help to kind of help foresee these, help educate them in a fun way?
Well, I think so. A couple of general comments, and then I'll try to give you some specific things. I think first of all, you have five children. You're going to find, I think, all of the data and the conversations I have suggest that different people handle it different ways. Boys and girls handle it different ways. Actually, I'm writing a piece now that will be in the New York Times a week from Sunday about face-to-face contact and how technology, because we're looking at girls between 8 and 12 learn to read nonverbal communication. For boys, it's a little bit later. And actually, because kids are spending so much time looking into screens, they're not learning these skills as well as they might. It's one of the reasons if you have teenagers, you might notice that your kids are not making eye contact with you as much as you might like. It's because they're not practicing it as much and because they're uncomfortable. It's one of the reasons the kids group date a lot is because they're sitting across from somebody having a kind of traditional date that we might think of from the past.
Oh, interesting.
It's actually overstimulating for children.
Hmm.
So you're going to find, and boys and girls are different. Like often boys will go on social media to kind of to tease, to talk about sports, and then there's a lot of kind of sex joking. Girls will often go on to, this is what I'm wearing. Do you think it's cute? Do you think it's hot? Do you think it's sexy? And they're looking for the social approval, whereas for boys, the social approval is expressed not in seeking compliments, but actually in kind of ragging each other and one another. So it's a different vernacular you're going to find for boys and girls, and some people just don't want it, and some people really seek it out. So I actually have, if you go to my site at brucefeiler.com, I actually have a toolkit that grows out of the Secrets of Happy Families with how to have a lot of these conversations. There's a group that I spoke to for my column called Common Sense Media, which actually has a lot of resources specifically for the technology kind of conversations you're talking about. But to me, I think the technology, the way to look at it is not to isolate technology from values, that it really it's all a conversation about values. I alluded earlier in our conversation to this situation with Ask.fm at the school that my daughters attend, and I was talking to the head of the middle school about this. And he was saying that he has a very simple playbook. And his playbook is when he finds out children are on these websites saying inappropriate things, maybe harassing, maybe bullying, which is sort of a term I think that's been a bit abused recently. It's like almost become a catch-all, but teasing, a bullying, anything inappropriate, or tripping somebody in the hallway. He calls the students in, and he said, I have a very thin playbook. And I say to the students, that's not the type of community we are.
Hmm.
I think a lot of it begins with, this is the type of family we are.
Mm-hmm.
We like to lift people up. We don't like to tear them down. And if I see you on a social media site tearing someone down, it's going to be the same thing if I see you on the playground tearing somebody down, or if I see you doing it around the dinner table. I'm just going to say, that's not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a broad technology, again, is a tool. It's not a thing unto itself. It's a tool of a larger thing of teaching our children values and how to be independent from us in the world.
What are your thoughts about cell phones at school, Bruce?
Well, you mentioned earlier in New York City this has been a big deal, right? So that there's been a rule in the book since the 80s that you couldn't have technology. Originally it was pagers because kids were doing drug deals. And then it became phones. And Mayor Bloomberg, who had three terms, as we all know, enforced this ban and did not allow cell phones and said it could be used for drugs, it could be used for texting, it could be used for pornography. Mayor de Blasio, of course, has been in office now a little bit over a year. He has teenage children, as you may know, and this was his number one issue in the campaign to allow it because, again, parents want it. So now they've lifted the ban as of this month, so now children can bring cell phones in schools. So, in fact, we are going on, we are sort of entering in New York City this situation where it's now allowed. Individual schools, I think, can stop it if they want, but citywide, it's now allowed. And I think that realistically, that's the world we're going to be in. It would be very hard to say, take the phone to school because your parents want you to have it and your family has decided it's appropriate. Even the Obamas, who I think have done really well with this, gave their daughters phones at 12. But did not allow them on Facebook until 17, and set down a lot of rules. No technology during the week, et cetera.
Right.
It's just the world we live in. So I think you're going to have to live in a world where you set restrictions as opposed to ban them from schools. It's just not realistic.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call, Sarah. Let's go next to Lois in La Crosse. Hi, Lois.
Hi. I just wanted to share some information that a neighbor passed on to me when my daughter was about the age that I would be giving her a phone. He had children in high school, one being a daughter, and when he was a police officer, he worked with rape victims, abused children, things like that, so he was very sensitive and watched out over his kids quite a bit. But his main rule was that they only had like 5 or 10 minutes to respond to any text he sent them. And if they didn't respond, there were consequences to that. So his daughter told him one night that she was going to go hang out with a friend at a scenic overlook. Well, the friend happened to be a guy.
Right.
And being a police officer, he knew how long it took to get places. So he sat and waited a certain amount of time and then sent her a text. And then figured out, well, she might be doing this or this. So he'd wait a little time and send her a text.
Mm-hmm.
So he kept interrupting her whole time, quote, hanging out.
On the scenic overlook, right.
Yes, just to make sure that nothing happened that he wouldn't want as a father.
And what were the consequences if she did not respond within 10 minutes?
They would get the phone taken away from them.
I see.
And they're very good kids that really weren't
right.
in any kind of trouble at all. So he was fortunate in that manner, but he was very protective on the other side.
Well, this is a real challenge, and I think it hints at something. There was the call we had at the outset of this segment was from a woman who was divorced, who mentioned that the children, her ex-husband and her had sent different approaches. This is really, to me, the unspoken dimension of one of the challenges in families is that mom and dad disagree. Even if they're married, they might disagree, or
sure.
There might be a step-parent who disagrees. It's very challenging here, and I think that we have this divide in my own family, which is to say my wife would be probably more inclined, like your friend the police officer, to say, okay, respond to my text every 3 minutes, within 5 minutes, and then be sending three an hour. That's over the line. I mean, if the child is 12, that's one set of facts. If the parent thinks the child is old enough at 17 or 16 to be on this overlook with a boy that the parents trust, you're going to have to trust. I mean, sooner or later, because here's the thing. Parenting is a very odd, odd situation. We start with our children entirely dependent from us,
mm-hmm.
and we have to deliver them at 18 independent from us.
Right.
And you want them, and you need them to practice that independence along the way. If you think you can get to 18 and say, go off and make your decisions by yourself, if you've never given them the freedom to fail or to make mistakes or to get a bruise or to get in an uncomfortable situation, it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
You need to give them some freedom, and I think the giving a child a phone, I'm the parent. These are the rules. I've said that repeatedly in this show. But it comes with some parent rules, too. Trust your child. Give them a little freedom. Let them make mistakes. Be there to help pick them up when they make a mistake. But you can't be texting them every 10 minutes saying, what are you doing now? What are you doing now? What are you doing?
No.
Really not serving you well or especially them well.
Absolutely. And there were also, I like the one family that you mentioned in your column. There was a rule that if you were going to use pictures of any family members, your children, in any of the adult Facebook postings, that the children had some say over what pictures were being used. I thought that was kind of interesting.
I would so, okay, if you notice, like, I see this on my own Facebook page and my own Twitter account and Instagram and all these things that I'm on now that I wasn't on a couple of years ago. And parents of newborns and babies post 100 pictures a week, right?
Yes, they
they're
do.
Exhausted, they're tired, they're,
right.
they're a little bit bored, perhaps. They're posting these pictures. If you graphed it, right, you know, baby pictures, enormous, right? Let's just say 100 pictures a week, right? Then we go, you know, age 2, 90, age 4, 70. It slowly goes down as the situations get more complicated, you're more engaged, the children grow up. You get to be 12 or 13, and then suddenly these children who have been your plaything on social media have their own social media presence, okay? So you alluded to this. I told the story in my New York Times column, which, by the way, if you go to brucefeiler.com, I have it up. I'm sure you have it up on Wisconsin Public Radio. A mom said she took a picture of her children with Santa every year. Oh, my God, how wonderful. And she sent it to all of her friends, and she adored it. Then suddenly her 14-year-old son, she forces him. Oh, it's in the name of our tradition. You've got to put your – I got to take a picture. Okay, so you can imagine the kid
right.
complaining. Okay, Mom, here's the picture with me, you know, with the stubble, you know, and his
right.
shirt untucked, looking down with Santa. And she posted on Facebook, and her son is otherwise – hibernating in his room, and boom, 2.3 seconds, he's running. How dare you do that? They have a rule now. You know, mom has to approve a picture of the kids.
I can see why they would have a rule.
I love that story.
It's a great story. We're welcoming more phone calls in just a moment. Bruce Feiler is our guest this hour, and it's brucefeiler.com if you were wondering, because he said there were suggestions on how to deal with it, that at his spot too, brucefeiler.com. It's F-E-I-L-E-R, by the way. Bruce writes the This Life column for the Sunday New York Times. He wrote a piece that caught our attention. Well, many of them do, but this one is how to manage media in families, particularly the cell phone. You've got the, you know, the first smile, the first walk, the first laugh, and then you got the first cell phone. And there's a bit of ambivalence about that because of all that comes with it. So we're welcoming phone calls for him. A couple lines are open if you've been trying to get through. Do you have rules in your family? How did you deal with the first cell phone call? What kinds of restrictions are placed on it? What kinds of conversations have you had as a family about use of cell phones? Do you have rules as a family as to when you're going to use them? Well, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our first Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls, and we go to Randy next. Hi, Randy.
Hi. I offer this only because this worked well for us. I had four of my children all go through high school. The youngest one just graduated from college, so that gives you the timeline. And you can't have a child without communication because the high schools have taken out the pay phones and stuff, and it's tough. When the oldest one got towards 15 years old, I sat down and I really thought, I don't want them to have cell phones, but they have to choose that. And we talked about it, and I came up with every solution, I thought, and I really recruited them into this idea. And so it worked for us. I said, if you can get by without owning a cell phone or without having your own cell phone until you're out of high school, I think there'll be great benefits to it. Now, what I will do is give you my cell phone anytime you need it. Now, what happened is that was a training wheel situation. They actually would take that, and they would see, like, my daughter actually, bless your heart for daughters, because they'll tell you the truth of what's going on. She actually would say, Dad, if her brother would take the phone and text the guy, would say, Dude, don't text me on your dad's phone. And so what they began to see is, oh, maybe this would be dangerous. How do I know? And they learned through using my phone when they had to have one. And then what I told them is the benefits are the sheer expense. I think with what you earn outside of school and what we save, each of you can own an automobile. And so I gave them a benefit on one side that we also had to learn by.
Right.
They still had my cell phone, and it really worked. I've got, you know, a medical doctor today, and they're all out of high school or all out of college, and they're very successful. And I know that's not universal, but it did work for us, and I keep wondering if maybe that possibility, because I think they are dangerous, they're distracting, and they need to learn. And actually now we all sit around at Christmas and we look at each other and we see folks that have this culture of just not being able to disengage.
Okay, let's get a response. Thank you very much for that great story, Randy. Bruce.
So I've been working on families now, Kathleen, for writing about families now for 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I set out to do this, I sort of said to myself, I'm not going to try to cram everything into a set of 3 or 4 things that all families must do, because I don't like those lists, the 5 things or 6 things you must do to have a happy family, because I forget number 3, and I disagree with number 5, and I think my kids will never get into college. But I have kept encountering, time and again, certain things that high-functioning families have in common. For me, it's 3 things that they have in common. And what we just heard really addresses the first one. And the 3 things are, number 1, adapt all the time. Okay, we think we can set a set of rules at the beginning and we can keep it. In fact, we need to adapt. Number 2, talk a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And not just difficult conversations. Talk about what it means to be part of a family. And then number three is, sounds the easiest, but it's the hardest, and that is go out and play. Whatever it is that your family does, you might like to walk, to bake, to play tennis, to see movies, whatever it is, find a family member, find some time, make a memory. To me, that's the secret of happy families. Those are the three things that high-functioning families have in common. And what I heard in this gentleman's story is, and to me the most important part of what he just said was, we sat down and we included the children in the process.
Mm-hmm.
I think many families today would find it unrealistic to have no phones, because 10 years ago, when his children were that age, it's a different time. If your family wants to have no phones, if you can make that work for you, I salute you. You know, I like the way of, if you give up this, I'll give you something else at the other end. But to me, the most important part is, if you're going to have technology, you have to sit down and say, this is something coming into our family. It can enhance our family, or it can detract from our family. And family time is very important. We will have time in our family where the phones get put off. It may be there's no phone when we're in the car together. It may be, as Geek Dad told me in this piece, 20 minutes in the car where we're going to talk, and then if it's a long car ride, you can bring it out. It could be every Sunday night we're going to have no phone. It could be every Saturday night we're going to have movie night. It could
right.
be every Sunday afternoon
mm-hmm.
we're going to go take a walk together. It could be we go to church together. Whatever it is, there needs to be times in your family where you have no phone. And whatever your rules are going to be, I keep saying this over and over again, the most important thing is you say, if these phones are going to become part of our family, they're going to have to play by the rules of our family. And these are the rules, and we're going to change, and we're going to meet to change them, because in 6 months, there's going to be an app that nobody can anticipate, and we're going to have to adjust, and that's okay. Your rules do not have to last you for 10 years.
Yeah. Just imagine. Well, it's hard to imagine. It's impossible to imagine what's going to be like 10 years from now, isn't it? Who knows
how we'll communicate. Oh, there's a great line in the internet, in the internet business. Okay, my wife does a lot of business in Silicon Valley, which is, if you're in the internet space, They use this. They have this saying: if you're doing today what you were doing 6 months ago, you were doing the wrong thing.
Oof.
Like, those businesses are built around constant iteration. Okay, agile. I have a TED talk out there called The Agile Family, which is about being adaptable. What's going on? We might have a set of rules, but guess what? Grandmother's coming this week. We need a different set of rules. Guess what? Dad's on a business trip next week. We need a different set of rules. Mom has a big presentation. We need to adjust a little. We need to have flexibility built in, but we also need to have some firmness. We need to have some core values that we never deviate from. So you're not going to be able to anticipate. There's no way. Like my caller said a few minutes ago, the technology will always be one step ahead. There's a lot of this. There's a whole code on texting now. Mom looking over my shoulder. Okay, so here comes Mom to check my text. So I have an abbreviation. Mom looking over my shoulder.
My.
Therefore, suddenly everybody goes
derated. Oh my! But Randy, thank you so much for your call and congratulations, Barbara in Oshkosh. Hi.
Hi. My question is regarding Snapchat. I think it's called. And
yep.
What do you think about it? And letting kids use it.
I don't even know what it is. What is it?
So Snapchat, I can't remember the caller's name. Do you have experience with it?
My granddaughter was on it with a bunch of children, and then my daughter didn't want her to be on it anymore, because what happens is when they're on it, there's no trace of anything that has been said on it after you say it. It can all be wiped off. And a policeman came to their school.
Ooh.
And talked about it, and this girl thought she was talking to another girl. And actually, it was a predator, a man predator.
Ooh.
But what happens, it's wiped clean. It disappears. Whatever you said disappears. So there is no trace then of that person talking to you.
Hmm.
And all
so,
this
right. So Snapchat was it does live on the Snapchat servers, I believe. So I think that you know, in criminal cases, and I just do want to emphasize that while there are those predators out there, you know, the numbers are very low, and so I'm a big believer in the there's a limit to this kind of scare tactic, the kind of scared straight philosophy of doing this. I'm less concerned about a predator than I'm more concerned about something inappropriate within the school, frankly, and some sort of ganging up and bullying and that kind of a situation. I think with these websites, I don't personally know off the top of my head if there's a minimum age for Snapchat. So I know that Facebook has a minimum age of 13. I know that Instagram, which is extremely popular among especially young girls, does not have a minimum age. So Instagram tends to be the gateway drug, shall we speak, because they can get on it earlier. And so Snapchat, it may be appropriate to say, okay, look, you're going to have to be a certain age. You're going to have to be whatever it would be, 16, before I'm going to let you be on Snapchat, because one of the rules that we're going to have in our family is I get to review every text. I won't look, and you know, every single thing you do. I'm going to give you some freedom, but therefore, sorry, it's not in our rule. It's not in our ecosystem of how we're dealing with this as a family that you can have something that's going to disappear, and that's on purpose. Sorry, that's not acceptable. There are other ways of doing it. There's nothing you can do on Snapchat that you can't do on texting or that you can't do on some of the other sites. So you can just say, not acceptable until you're a certain age. Mm.
And KP,
so I'm with your daughter.
The minimum age, he says, is 13 in compliance with the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. But when you download it, Snapchat asks for your date of birth. And if your birth year tells you you're under 13, you're redirected to the kid version that's called Snap Kids, K-I-D-Z, according to a parent's guide to Snapchat.
Well, one of the tricky things is, if one of the things that Facebook did, it's been very controversial, especially in the kind of the transgender world, and is that Facebook makes you use your own identity, but Snapchat does not. So these other sites, it's easier to get around. Whereas, well, because you're only going to be on, once you have an account on Facebook, people do get around Facebook, but it's much less common because the majority of their, if you're 11 or 12, even if you kind of get around it on Facebook, you're not going to have a full community. So it's much easier to lie on Instagram and Snapchat and other sites.
Yeah. Thanks, Barbara. And Deborah in Michigan. Hi.
Hi. I just want to say your motto is, we are the parents, these are the rules. Just remember that there are a lot of non-married couples and there's a lot of joint custody out there. My son had a cell phone that his dad purchased, and it was, he constantly got in trouble, and there was constant phone calls on the answer machine from teachers and then the principal. So his dad, because he was paying for it, kept giving it back to him. It would be taken away from him, and his dad would give it back to him. So there was the problem. But I think, you know, like the caller, like about 25 minutes ago, said, it depends on the child. It varies. So you have to use your own best judgment and your good instincts.
Let me talk about blended families for a second. I appreciate the call, and I think that this is a particular situation. I personally believe, from my experience with families, is that what, in fact, I've been saying over and over again is, we're going to talk about what it means for our family, whatever kind of family that we've had. So it's the conversation that I think is most important. In an odd, that can both be harder in blended families because there may be strain between the original birth parent. They may not be communicating a lot. It may be a difficult situation. You then have step parents and step spouses and step parents and step children, and it becomes infinitely more complicated. It can also, and there are many cases where blended families, in effect, I'm trying to choose my words carefully, have something of an advantage because of the reality that the children are going back and forth between different homes. It in some ways forces parents to have a conversation that they might not otherwise, if they are in a more nuclear family, be compelled to have. Oh, we'll work it out as it comes up. So one thing that I see consistently in blended families is they are forced to say, these are the rules, or these are the rules at my house, which might be different from the rules at mom's house or the rules at dad's house.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is, as I said at the very outset of our conversation, you have moms working now, three-quarters of moms outside the home, and dads much more involved. So I think that the dynamic of difference between parents is much higher now, both in nuclear families, blended families, single families, you have the same kind of dynamic. So my feeling is you need to have the conversations, and if unfortunately having a parent that is more loose and that parent has their own household, well, then there comes the other household that can come in and say, okay, well, this is how I approach it.
And that means we're going to stop. We're out of time. Thank you, Bruce, so much for being with us. It was a great hour. Bruce Feiler, our guest this hour, and he writes the This Life column for the Sunday New York Times. Bruce Feiler, FEILER.com, for more information and tips about cell phones and media and all that we've been talking about this hour. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the show.